Hi Dominique, welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. How are you doing?
Doing fine, Andrew. I can see you are dressed up for the tropical climate, but I can't see the palm trees. That always worries me, you know.
I just looked
It's a
through and
signal.
I saw this old macro thing I must have done before. Anyway, we'll try it just as a mix-up. Okay, let's kind of dive in as we always like to do and kind of go over things that stood out from the last week. Obviously, a lot of stuff's around the Fed and the incoming administration. So maybe let's kind of start there. And obviously, any surprising kind of market movements or misinterpretations you think, let's kind of go from there.
Cool. So the Fed, we had Powell yesterday. And I think the market overreacted to a specific sentence he had in the speech, which was, we are in no hurry to cut rates. And he said exactly the same thing in September when he cut 50. So I don't think it signals that it's the Fed will be on hold in December. I mean, this is a data, short-term data-driven Fed. We are 5 weeks away from December. We still have the one more inflation and one more NFP meeting. It is far too early for the Fed to tell us what it's going to do, especially since they keep telling us, we are deciding meeting by meeting based on the totality of the data. And I forgot there is kind of a mantra, which is in every or prayer or incantation, whatever you want to call it, it's in every written and even verbal communication from the Fed. So I think I think there's the market is a little bit too pessimistic.
Okay. And then anything around the price action, that kind of stuff, anything around obviously the incoming administration we could talk about.
So the incoming administration, so they made big promises during the campaign, economic promises, which they will have to deliver to some extent. But the reality is their margin for maneuver is actually quite limited. So take the tax cut, for instance. The budget deficit is already the largest since World War II outside of recession. So in terms of a tax cut, okay, if they don't fund them with expenditure cuts, the budget will widen. And as Bilal showed in our webinar, the scope for cutting expenditures is very limited because a lot of them are mandatory programs like Social Security. And then there are programs that Trump promised not to touch. So, and the thing,
Medicare and defense, basically.
yeah, and def yeah.
I had a question on the defense thing. I mean, can they not potentially make a case, or they just can't, to say, well, we actually cut 8%, but the delivery is going to be higher, or the efficiency or the preparedness of the US military is actually even stronger. We just cut dead wood or we're holding the suppliers much more accountable.
So that is a very interesting question. There is no question there are huge inefficiencies in the Department of Defense that they have tried for, I think, or at least 5 years to do an audit. They've never been able to complete it. So the question is whether this, how do you call it, DOGE? DOGE, DOGE, so Department of Government Efficiency, run by Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, whether they will have the guts to go to what is, I think, fair, and this is military people, insiders saying, one of the least efficient government departments, which is typically what happens when something is lavishly funded. So will they have the guts to go there and ask for efficiency improvement? That is going to be so interesting. But you can expect the establishment, the Washington establishment, to cry murder if, anyone touches 1 trillion or so that we spend on defense every year. But yeah, there is definitely, I
Yeah,
mean.
I remember when I saw Bilal talking about that, I was thinking that question, which is, you could reduce, but I guess, I mean, listen, those two guys are pretty smart guys. They can come up with some type of metrics and say, here we're proving we're actually better arming our US military with more weapons, better security, better, military hardware. Software guidance, but we've reduced costs by 100, 100 billion.
Yeah, but it's not easy to do that, and you will have
Oh
to
no, I know, but I'm saying
vested
like.
interest. I mean, even the military itself has written about the inefficiencies of its procurement process, like very expensive weapons, new weapons like the F-35, for instance, that still has so many technical issues. So they are very aware, but then, you have, I think, only two contractors, main defense contractors left. So not much competition. And that speaks to the general issue with doing this government efficiency thing, is that it's not sitting in an office and writing magical formulas to increase efficiency. You need to change the incentives. And you need to change the incentives, not just within the government, but outside. So the lack of competition among defense contractors is a key example of why it's going to be hard to increase the efficiency of the procurement process. So, this is an administration that sold itself as a disruptor, and there is a lot that could be disrupted in Washington. But in order to do that, you need to take on the vested interest, and I'm 100% behind them, but it's not going to be easy.
Yeah. Well, I know that some of the guys that they're close with and that had support actively supported Trump was like the Palmer Luckey, the Anduril Industries. I don't know how big that company, but obviously that's a somewhat of a startup. And I think I saw that. I don't know if that's okay for him to do, but he was saying I could, I understand really how the process works. I mean, they're a startup kind of defense technology company. And he's like, there's absolutely ways to kind of do this more efficiently.
So, yeah, I don't disagree, but identifying the waste is the first step of the process. Then, if you want to act on it, you are going to take money from someone and give it to someone else, or say saving it. And I can guarantee that very powerful someone who is going to see government money moving away from them is not going to say nothing. This is going to be a politically, technically, and politically challenging process, but I am all for it.
Yes, it's interesting, we generally have this bearish view on US fixed income, right? Especially kind of the longer end. And I know your view is pretty much no hikes for oh, sorry, hike for no cuts for next year. So I think if anything, it's been a little bit of a surprise if we say if significantly cuts in immigration or makes deportation, a huge part of the thing. If we're talking about tariffs, if we're talking about taxes, I mean, all three of those individually are pretty inflationary. And certainly steepening of the curve probably as well. And it's a little bit surprising that the only thing to offset, like it's been a pretty tepid move somewhat. Vol's got hit a lot of stuff. I still think these are probably great trades. One, there's a point, there's a 2 months to go before implementing, but usually the market doesn't wait around. The only thing to offset it is this potential view that the government will actually be significant, and I think all the discussions we have and Bilal's points about they're really hemmed in, but somehow the market seems to be believing this efficiency thing, which it just seems it Listen, we all hope it's true, but I think it's strange that the market. Then the other flip side is, I guess, bonds sold off pretty significantly going into this. So there's a point of saying a lot of that was in the price.
So I have a more cynical take on the price action, which is, what got Trump elected is really inflation, right? This is a point Bilal made in his post-election note, is that a very interesting interview of Gary Gensler, a Harvard history professor. If you look around the world, in every country where you've had a bout of high inflation, the incumbents has been defeated in recent
That's
elections.
basically every
So
developed
the
country in the world, right?
and as you said, the Trump crowd is very smart. They'll see that, and they know that if they trigger inflation, they're probably to get voted out. So, this bond market subdued or relatively subdued price action could just be people saying rationality will prevail. I
Yeah,
mean,
there's a lot of
stranger
smart
things have
finance
happened.
people that are hanging around, and they're gonna, I guess, yeah, I mean, I guess that kind of has to be it. Because when you brought about the deficit, I think there's an answer, and the answer is, like, the deficit's too big, you can't cut taxes. But I think this administration can make the case, whether right or wrong. They'll say, last time we cut taxes, actually the deficit held steady or went down because growth outperformed. So,
But actually, that's not what happened. When they cut
but
taxes,
that's the case that they'll make, right?
tax revenues went down, and t tax cuts never pay for themselves.
Maybe this time. I think that's the case
This
this time.
time is different, right? Well, I mean, we'll all be waiting and positioning ourselves accordingly.
Yes. And then just to kind of on the immigration stuff. So just to reiterate, your view is for
My
now,
views.
unless there's a big change, that inflation will be a little bit higher and growth may be even a little bit weaker, because if you've cut off it before we're even talking about sending people out of the country,
Exactly. And that's what Powell said yesterday. He said in the Q&A that the immigration surge, it's very interesting how he said it. He said it raised growth, but the impact on the labor market was ambiguous. And there, Mr. Powell was being a little political in the sense that, the estimate of illegal migrant last year was 3.3 million, which is enormous. It's like 1.5%, actually almost 2% of the labor force. So we're talking about huge impact on the labor market. And, I'm a simple-minded economist. I tend to think that when the supply of something goes up, its price goes down. So it's very like, and that's actually what the data shows, that wage growth was low, most likely because of the surge in low-skill migrants. But Powell said, the impact on the labor market is ambiguous. Why? Because if the head of the Fed said that the immigration surge lowered wages, all political hell will break loose. So he stayed away.
Sure.
But the interesting story is that he's very much thinking along the line that I am thinking, which is immigration. He also said productivity, which I agree with, was a big driver of the of disinflation with strong growth. And now that immigration, the surge has ended even before people get deported. I think what he's trying to figure out is where the economy is going to end up. Because when I was researching my piece for this week, I discovered that in 2019, the CBO estimate of NFP for 2023, 2024, average monthly NFP, less than 40,000 a month. Because of demographics. So
Right.
the demographics were terrible. And I think that's one reason why the US Treasury, didn't object too much to the surge. So there is, we don't have good data on immigration, and there is a big question mark on where NFPs are going to settle. The CBO latest forecast is 130,000 a month for this year on average, which is lower than what we had in Q3. I think it could be even lower than that. And the difficulty for the Fed is going to be to figure out whether lower NFP reflects lower immigration or the weakening of the US economy. So I think Powell, wants to see where things settle down in terms of NFP before he takes a sort of a broad strategic stance for next year.
Yeah, that's super interesting because we start getting 70,000, 80,000, 70,000 prints. Everyone's going to say, wow, growth is definitely slowing. And I haven't heard, but I think a lot of people say that. And that's very interesting that the prediction, obviously, sans COVID, was these kind of numbers, and that would be the norm.
But also, what's interesting for Powell is that in terms of his conflict with the Trump administration, actually, there may not be one once the Trump people realize what immigration, just a slowdown in immigration, not an expulsion, what it does to growth and inflation, perhaps they will be less in practice, less aggressive with their expulsion plans, and also less antagonistic with the Fed. So I suspect Mr. Powell is watching all this data and thinking, it's going to be an interesting year ahead.
Yeah, but it makes sense. So we could continue to see kind of very subdued like weekly jobless claims, but at the same time, so I'm like, oh, well, the economy's doing fine, but at the same time, monthly payroll numbers will also not look great. And
100%. 100%. And the market is going to be a bit disconcerted.
yeah.
But I think it's basically slower growth without an increase in unemployment or in the output gap, so in spare capacity. And so it's slower growth with sticky inflation, if we are lucky. Hopefully, not higher inflation.
Okay, cool. So let's for the week ahead, what are you looking out for? What do you think
So
should
we have a
happen?
quiet week ahead, not much going on. I think we'll get existing home sales, which is not super interesting because we know it's going to be low. We know that the housing market, the liquidity or the transactions are not increasing much because mortgage rates remain high. We'll also get the S&P PMI. That are important from a trading perspective, and we have, our event monitor on the website discussing how to trade and the impact on the market volatility. But from an economic perspective, the surveys have decoupled from the hard data since late 2010. So it's not, from my perspective, it's not super important. And then we have a few Fed speakers. I think four or five. The ones that will be the more interesting one is Goolsbee, because this week we heard a lot from the hawks like Mousalem or Kashkari. And Goolsbee is one of the more profile doves, and he's going to make a case for a cut in December. So not much surprise there, but still interesting to watch.
Okay, so right now we have kind of 14.5 basis points priced in for December. Actually, even including January, you have less than one full cut priced in. And your view is they do cut in December and then they go on hold.
But yeah, my view is conditional on the data. And the good thing about Powell, I mean, from my perspective, Powell, introducing the caveat we are not in a rush to cut, is that it was in reaction to the print, to the inflation print, which we think is going to mean about 24 basis points for core PCE this month. And my view has been that the Fed would cut, provided that average core PCE, so the data we just got and the data we'll get before the FOMC, is less than 25 basis points. So I think my sort of a critical value was
Pretty close,
there.
but it's under, right?
Kind of there.
Okay, cool. I'll just give a quick update on some of the stuff over the last week. A few interesting pieces today, especially with Bilal did a piece looking using our AI model, our AI model, or Fed LLM sentiment index. Shows that the Fed is somewhat behind the curve, kind of what we're saying, and fits in with your view about no cuts next year. Rates Weekly's out. Henry highlighting a lot of his views, especially around dovish Bank of England, and obviously that against a hawkish Fed. The G10 FX Weekly. We're asking the question, is it time to temper the dollar bullishness? Another view is, should we continue the dollar bullishness, but will this be kind of a grind? And should we take advantage of, in some cases, vols being somewhat elevated? For me, I've my view, I really think a grind higher in dollar max is probably one of the better trades out there. Modern portfolio, Caroline updates on Turkey. And if we remember, Trump and Erdogan had kind of a interesting relationship at times, but mostly.
Oh, we are in for fascinating
Those
time.
two in particular.
Trump wants to take on the DC establishment, and this is going to be fascinating to watch.
Yes, it'll definitely. Bilal breaks down about whether the next Treasury Secretary would be disruptive and what that means, more trade ideas, a lot of super cool interesting stuff. We had the bearish view on Euro yen. A lot of our views are somewhat continuing to be bearish on the euro in general, and still a grind higher in dollar China. From my side, kind of wish everyone a lovely weekend, especially you, Dominique, and
Thank you. Likewise.
yes, and we're around anytime people want anything, chat, feedback, as you always like to say, and great.
100%. And negative feedback, especially helpful, keeps me on my toes.
Awesome. And hopefully we'll be releasing our update of our event monitor, which has a lot of kind of super cool insights, and this is a series of progression with the idea we'll now have implied vols on there. So this is kind of the event weights based for the next kind of data, US data points coming out for the next 8 days, and the impact on a whole bunch of different currency pairs. So that should be really cool. All right, have a lovely weekend.